What if every day you had the chance to experience more love and intimacy in your life? We're going to be sharing stories of struggles and triumphs in love, sex, and relationships, along with expert advice to create more conscious connections. Enjoy this podcast with Dawn Richard. Wake up to real love.
Hello, everyone. This is Dawn Richard, also known as The Awakening with Dawn. And this is the Wake Up to Real Love podcast, show, whatever it is. And I'm super excited to have my friend Christopher Rausch on here. Yay, Christopher. How are you?
What's going on, Dawn? I'm excited to be here. I'm awesome. How are you?
I'm awesome, too. We have just been chatting before we started recording, and you just remind me all the time of how much I love you and how much I enjoy your energy and your company and your wisdom and all this kind of stuff. So I'm super excited to dive in. But let me introduce you properly.
Awesome. Thank you.
Christopher Rausch is, Christopher Rausch is debatably the world's most effective and impactful, unstoppable. Thank you. Unstoppable, no excuses, coach, speaker, workshop facilitator, retreat leader, whose life apprenticeship of the victim to victor is nothing short of miraculous and truly inspirational. Yes, that's very, very true. Today, as an international keynote speaker, Christopher captivates and enthralls audiences with his story and then empowers them to accept what life has presented, embrace change, and take action personally and professionally. Welcome, kick-ass Christopher Rausch.
What's up, Dawn? Thank you. Woo-hoo. Unstoppable. Since last time I saw you, I got another tattoo, by the way. You know, I think you know.
Let me see.
I already had this one that says, what doesn't kill me only makes me stronger. For those of you listening in podcast land, there's a tattoo on my right inner forearm that I had to put on there in 2016 because I was going through my own shit. And I often tell my clients and I tell myself, what doesn't kill me only makes me stronger. So on this side, for my 55th birthday, it says something that somebody told to me when I was 17. It says, you are only limited by the parameters of your own mind. And I put his initials WTW down there. So I was told this at 17 years old after being homeless, after two failed suicide attempts, after a lot of stuff, which we can dig into as much as you want. 17 years old, long hair, living in an apartment with five guys, working three jobs. And this guy says to me, have you thought about going back to school, Chris? Have you thought about getting your GED? And I'm like, this guy's crazy. He has a room in his house of living room furniture he doesn't even sit on. That is just unfathomable to me because I grew up without furniture pretty much. Yeah. And so I'm like, this guy is asking me to go to college and go to school. Are you kidding me? Like, dude, you're stupid. You're crazy. But yet I took that imperfect action and I said, all right, if he thinks I can do it, then perhaps maybe I can. Maybe I'm just selling myself short. And I just kept taking that imperfect action to become the man I am today.
Okay. Thank you for having me. Of course. I'm so grateful that you're here. It's been a while. So, I mean, it's been a while since I've wanted this. So, you know, you're limited by the parameters of your own mind. So back when you were 16, 17, 18, however you old, what was going through your mind where you wanted to end your life?
I was tired of trying to survive. That was literally that. I was from such an early age. I grew up without a father. I grew up with a mom who was 26 when she had me. She had various chemical dependencies, drug dependencies, dependencies on men. She was very amorous or whatever. She was like dated a lot of people. I can't remember the word. They have a
like a love addict almost.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
It was the '60s. It was free love. So I grew up without my dad, grew up in a pretty abusive household for, my young child like life. And then, when I was 13 years old, we wound up becoming homeless. So at the age of 13, I was also getting in trouble at school. I was doing drugs at school. I started fighting at school. I went from being bullied to being the bully. Skipping classes and getting all sorts of trouble. And then I came home one day and found out that we were getting evicted from our house. And so for the four ensuing years, I lived in a station wagon with 18 cats and four dogs. That is not a joke. Not an understatement.
Seriously?
18 cats and four dogs. You know that. In a 1960 station wagon. So it was a huge wood paneling station wagon. We lived in that car for 4 years off and on. We stayed in motels here and there as we could with rent vouchers and things of that nature. But, I just got tired of surviving. I got tired of being taken advantage of. I got tired of being let down. I got tired of having my dreams, my hopes broken and dashed. And I just tried to kill myself twice. Unfortunately, I sucked at it. And it wasn't until I had a gun put to my head and I told the guy, if you're going to pull the fucking trigger, pull it. And I fully expected to hear a click and thought, that'll be it. This is going to be the way to go. I'm just going to have one little click and I'm not even going to know anything. It's just going to be, I'm going to be gone. Uh-huh. And my mom's going to have to figure out how to live without me, her little whipping boy. And fortunately, a gentleman came out from a motel room that we were staying, this really bad motel. And he came running out. He's like, no, him and his mom are cool. Him and his moms are cool. And because it was a lot of interesting people at that motel. Let's just put it that way. There was prostitution, drugs, all sorts of fighting. Yeah. I saw more fights and people. It was a very, very disgusting place. Let's just put it that way. And so the guy said, no, him and his moms are cool. It was all over a pack of cigarettes. The guy thought I was racist because I went and buy a carton of cigarettes that he was selling that were stolen. And I went to reach in my back pocket to show the one that I actually smoked cool menthol cigarettes, which is what black people, most of my black friends smoked, was either cool menthols, Benson and Hedges, or Newports. And I went to go reach into there and just show him my cigarettes. And I thought he's going to probably get pissed at me because maybe I'm making fun of him. Yeah. But I smoked menthols and I pulled them out of my pocket. I had the gun to my head. And I said, I smoked these because all my friends would bum my Marlboro Reds off of me. So I smoked these because nobody bums them off of me. And I said, if you're going to pull the trigger, pull it. And then I just winced and then nothing happened. And then I just decided at that point, Don, that I was either going to get out of that situation in a pine box. I was either going to, or I was going to go in a patrol car because I was doing bad things with bad people. I was running people to deal drugs. I was stealing, shoplifting, all sorts of stuff. I mean, I was on the verge of graduating.
Lost.
Yeah. And so I decided just to take responsibility for my life. And, because I didn't want to die and I didn't want to go to jail. And through a lot of hard work and a lot of imperfect action and a lot of, gritting my teeth, I've made it this far in life and I've done quite well.
That's amazing, Christopher. I mean, when I've heard this story before, I mean, I forgot some of the details, but every time you tell this story, I think, what the fuck, you know, like if I had been in that situation, I have no earthly idea how I would deal with living in a car with 18 cats and 4 dogs and your mom, who was sometimes physically present, but probably a lot of times psychologically, emotionally, just completely gone.
Oh yeah.
And so
she was in her own little world. She had her own little world, according to Samantha.
And you really, basically, we're trying to parent yourself.
Parent myself, parent her, ultimately. Uh-huh. Pretty quick, it became me taking care of her. When I was probably about 14, 15, that's when the shift really started to happen. That's where I had to get jobs and had to take care of us. Because she wouldn't go back and get a job. She was
be the man of the house.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I didn't realize how distorted it was really looking and feeling. I knew at 17 it was starting to feel weird. And I was just like, no, this is not going to happen. You have lived your life. And I just finally put it to myself that way. I'm like, you lived your life. You fucked your life up. You keep making horrible decisions. You don't take me into consideration. I have to pick me first. And because I did that, Don, I've helped thousands of people because of that, because I had to pick me first. And so many people don't pick themselves first. They pick everybody else first, thinking that they're going to take care of themselves later, and they don't. They wind up dead, right? Or they wind up with regrets, or they wind up significantly unhealthy, hoping, wishing, and praying that they just get back to the point where they used to be, but they never get back there because that time is gone. And so what I teach people is the fact that you got to take responsibility for yourself. You have to take those scary risks. You know, you have to leave in the middle of the night with your baby to go to a rape shelter because your husband's physically abusive and you have to rebuild your life. I know somebody like that, Monica Kretschmer. She was on my show, The Raw and Unscripted Show. She literally left in the middle of the night. You know, people sit there and say, well, I have nowhere to go. She had nowhere to go. She was rich and she had power in her community, but her husband was controlling and manipulating and all these things. And she said, I have to go. And she went to an abused, battered women's shelter that she used to donate money and clothes to. Wow. She was embarrassed. She was all these different things with her baby. She felt like a failure, but she ultimately grew out of the ashes. She started the Universal Women's Network in Canada, which is the largest women's network in Canada. Wow. She fought back against her husband all those years, getting so smart she was able to defend herself in court. And she showed her son, this is what we do. We do not let people take advantage of us. And so she dug her heels in and did what she needed to do to be that parent. And so many people are out there being miserable and they're taking their kids through that journey, hoping, wishing, and praying it doesn't affect them, but it does affect them, because I know as a coach, most of the things that screw people up are their opinions that they've created about themselves from their parents.
The limitations of their mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so is this where the no excuses came from? Like you just said, I can't keep making excuses for why my life is a complete mess because of my mom.
Yep. Nope. Nope. I took responsibility. I mean, as you know, I have these bracelets and they say no excuses and they say believe. I had to believe, you know, I had to believe that I had survived that long and I had survived two suicide attempts for some reason. And I decided at that point that I had to take that responsibility for my life, that perhaps I was brought here to go through this experience to be able to get to a point where I make that determination for myself and I get stronger for myself. And I believe that all of us are on that journey. It's called the hero's journey, right? Yeah. Joseph Campbell talks about it on, you can go to YouTube. You guys can all find it on YouTube. It's called Finding Joe. It's an amazing story about our journey in life, how we go through these peaks and valleys and all these different things. And when I think about it, I know about it now, all the times that I've grown the most in my life are through those challenging moments, through those dark moments, through the valley of the night of the soul, where you're just like, oh my God, I want to give up, but we make it through it. We've made it through all the different things in our life. So there's absolutely zero reason why we won't make it through all the other things that happen in our life. And so why not choose to see those things as those things were obstacles and battles and tests designed to get us stronger, to prepare us for what's next. And when I think about all the different things in my life, the things that my mom, you know, made me go to work at 10 years old, getting a washing cars in the neighborhood and selling lemonade and all these things, I was mad at it and I was pissed at that time, but that taught me how to deal with people. That taught me how to do sales. So I got into telemarketing as a way of getting us out of being homeless. So I did telemarketing because I was able to talk to people, so on and so forth. All these little things and all these challenges throughout my life, you know, going through a divorce at an early age, all these different things, becoming a manager, becoming a director, all these things have kept preparing me for what's next. They prepared me for parenthood. You know, parenthood is now preparing me for what's next. Mm-hmm. All these different things kind of build on each other. So that's really it is. You can't give yourself an excuse, because our brain, our reptilian brain, is designed to keep us what? Safe and comfortable. We actually, we desire that.
Comfortable in our discomfort.
Oh yeah. And all that stuff. We have to sit there and decide that I'm not going to sit there and listen to my reptilian brain saying, oh, I don't feel like going and working out right now. I don't feel like getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I'm not a morning person. If you tell yourself 365 days a year, you're not a morning person, guess what? You will never be a morning person. But if you decide that your health and your fitness and your mindset and your longevity is way more important than a stupid excuse about, oh my God, it's uncomfortable to get up that early, fuck off. Then you're going to wind up being regretful later on in your life, because you're going to have time to go to the doctors. You're going to have time to go to the pharmacy. You're going to have time to go to those phone numbers. You're going to have time to feel like shit. You're going to have time to complain about it. Why not just make that investment right now to sit there and say, you know what? All I need to do is hydrate. I need to get half my body weight in ounces of water a day. I need to get some decent sleep. I need to eat some decent food. I need to get out and get some exercise. I need to get some vitamin D. I need to talk about my problems and I need to surround myself with great people. There, I'm your coach.
Okay. What is the difference, Christopher, between the people who make those choices that help propel their life in a forward motion, you know, like not using the excuses, versus the people that stay stuck in the excuses? What is the difference? This is my philosophical question of humanity, right? Mm-hmm. Like what makes people stay stuck and what helps people? I mean, what makes people want to propel forward?
Three letters. W-H-Y. Why? When you have a big enough why, you have a big enough how. Mm-hmm. And in that is called leverage. So the reason why people change is because they have leverage in their life. You think about this big, humongous rock, right? You're not going to walk up and you're not going to push that rock. But if you have enough leverage, if you have a big enough, strong enough piece of whatever to move that rock, then you're going to move that rock. So you need a big enough why. And so here's what I tell people. Number one, write your eulogy. Because when you think about the why of your life, and ultimately, we're all going to pass away. We're all going to die. And ultimately, people are going to gather around and talk about us.
Right.
Now, what do you want people to gather around and talk about you? What do they want? What do you want people to say about you? I want people to say, wow, Christopher fought for what's right and what's fair. Christopher risked for which that mattered. Christopher made this earth a better place for who he was and what he did. Christopher was a great dad. Christopher was compassionate. He listened. He had empathy for people who have differences of opinions. He wanted to bring this world together despite all of our differences and socially and politically and sexually and all these other different things. I want people to get together and say that I made a difference. Mm-hmm. And so every day when I wake up, that's what I choose to do. I set the intention every single day to use my words and my actions to make this world a better place. I'm doing it right now. If this is the last thing I do, this will go down in history. So people, Don will gather around and say, oh my God, I saw Chris on his last day. He was still full of life and he was still ready to conquer and bring everything that was, bring everything back together. My school is calling my, my wife's going to have to get that. I'm getting called by my school right now. My kid's okay. I'm on the podcast. They'll call me my wife. When you have a big enough why. So I went home that day and I wrote my eulogy. And when I wrote my eulogy, that gave me the vision of who it is that I'm becoming. So every day I get to choose to do that. So I had the leverage. Number two, when you think about that leverage, so many people don't understand that they're not doing their best, that they could actually do way better than they can do.
Yeah.
And so I gave this example. I give this example quite often, and it often jars people, but I have to go dark in order to create and answer your question.
Yeah.
It takes leverage. So I asked somebody wanted to work with me recently, and I told him it was $10,000 for 6 months. I said, we meet every week, blah, 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 all this other stuff. She goes, oh my God. She goes, I wish I could do that, but I really can't afford it. And I said, I totally understand that. I get that. $10,000 for me was a lot of money before. But let me tell you about the story about how I spent $5,000 on myself and how it changed my life. And I tell her that story. And she's still I'm not trying to convince her to spend money that she doesn't have, but I'm like, you can get more resourceful. And I could tell that there was something in there that she really wanted to do it, but I felt she was giving me excuses.
Uh-huh.
And I said, who do you love the most in your life? And she said, my son. And I said, what's your son's name? She goes, Doug. And I said, how old's Doug? She goes, 10. And I said, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you do for Doug? Would you take a bullet for Doug? She goes, I'd take a bullet for Doug. You know, I would do anything with Doug. He's my whole life, you know. And then she tell me all these things about her pregnancy and da, da, da. And I said, okay. So on a scale of 1 to 10, you do anything for Doug? Yes. Okay, cool. If I asked you right now to go out there and raise $10,000 and can't be illegal, immoral, or unethical, I said, are you going to do it? And she goes, well, I just got through telling you, Chris, $10,000 is a lot of money. And I said, okay. I said, so I just want to make sure. I said, so you couldn't come up with $10,000 in 7 days. She goes, Chris, yeah, I don't know. And I said, okay, now I'm going to go dark. And I said, just bear with me for a second. And I said, okay, you come home from work tomorrow. Doug is sitting in a chair. You walk up, you walk through the door, and standing next to Doug is a man with a gun against Doug's temple and says, if you don't come up with $10,000 in the next 7 days, I'm going to pull the trigger. I said, now what do you do?
And I guess I was going to figure it out.
I could see the Zoom, and she's like, and she went, she goes, I'd have to figure it out. And I said, so what would you do? I said, just keep going. That. What would you do? Would you borrow? Oh, I'd borrow money. I would sell. I've got a car that's sitting in the driveway that needs an alternator, but I've been saving it for 4 years for my kid. I've got two extra iPhones that I don't even use that I was going to donate to somebody, but they can't use them because of the SIM, blah, 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 blah. And I said, so now what we're talking about is being resourceful,
right?
Being resourceful, right? Do you have shit you can sell? Well, yeah, I've got a bunch of stuff. I mean, do you have purses? Do you have all that stuff adds up? Do you have extra televisions you don't use? Whatever it might be. Do you have a gift? I mean, are you able to crochet napkins? Are you able to make whatever it might be? Do you have some sort of skill that you can put on Etsy? All these little bitty little things will add up, and that will create that resource for you to make action, to realize that you can do better than you're currently doing. And I teach people how to have that inner discipline, that inner, the basically I tell you, you give your inside voice a name. Like Daryl. Okay, Daryl. Fuck off, Daryl. I don't care, Daryl. You don't want to work out at 5 o'clock in the morning, Daryl. I'm going to get the fuck up at 5 o'clock in the morning because that's what winners do, Daryl. Right? Give that inside voice a name. Right? Don't be a little bitch. I mean, whatever you got to say to yourself, that voice in your head is trying to keep you safe and still and everything else and comfortable because it doesn't want you to get hurt. It doesn't want you to get disappointed. It doesn't want you to get rejected. It doesn't want to make you feel embarrassed because that's the little kid that's still inside of us. Right. But once we decide to let that go and realize that we have to grow and make mistakes in order to learn to get stronger, then we get excited about it. No longer it becomes a fear. I'm not afraid of what Don's going to say. I'm not afraid of what anybody's going to say. I'm afraid of what they're not going to say if I don't take chances. I'm afraid of what they're going to say at my funeral and go, wow, he had such potential to go do so much, but he always lived in that quiet desperation, hoping, wishing, and praying that something would change.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? We have to go out there and take that imperfect action. And that requires us to get out of our comfort zone. That requires us to get around people who are doing the things that we want to do because that reads that other energy. Like, right, when people start working with me, they all of a sudden their physiology changes. Like, okay, now you can get excited about life. It's okay. Yeah. Life. It's okay to get excited. It's okay to be really grateful for the shit you have right now too. Don't be sitting there looking at all the other stuff and you're going to be happy when I have this or when I feel like this or when I look like that. That's bullshit. You should be happy right now because the rest of that shit's gravy. Like, you're breathing. You get able to go to the bathroom by yourself. You have loved people in your life. You have food. You have electricity. You have air conditioning. You have a car. You have a job. You have all these different things in your life, but yet we're always looking for the thing we don't have to fill that void. And that's what I teach people, is not to be looking that way, to look within yourself and to realize that you are more than enough, that you have more than enough. And the rest of it's just an enjoyment along the journey of life and living. Sorry, I get passionate.
No, I love this because when you were talking, I was thinking about all of these things. Like, so many people are afraid, right? They're afraid to go out of their comfort zone. They're afraid to try new things. They feel like when they try new things, I have to be perfect. And I always say, what about when you were a kid learning how to walk? You know, you fell down, you got up. You fell down, you got up. You fell down, you got up, until you did it enough times and you became good at it. And this is how life is. But for some reason, we've been conditioned into not trying or holding ourselves back or, you know, afraid to take risks, afraid to use our imagination, afraid to play, afraid to go out of our comfort zone to do things that we don't know how to do. And because of that fear of, well, I'm going to be a failure, or people are going to judge me, or they're going to, you know, make fun of me. Is the school okay?
Yeah, no, I'm just leaving. I'm just actually sending Barb a text message because they left me a message. I'm like, hey, can you call the school? I have no idea what's going on. Yeah, you could tell I was doing so. I'm like, they left me a message. I figured they were trying to call her, and I figured she would text me saying, oh, something happened. But I just want to make sure that. No, I mean, that fear is, I mean, you think about that again, that goes back to that deep-rooted situation of what happened when we were kids. And so what I invite people to do is to sit there and put yourself in the place of your parents, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, I had a lot of anger and animosity and frustration.
I bet you did.
Towards my mom. I really did. She kept saying, I did the best I could with what I had. And I'm like, that's bullshit. You fucking chose your cats before me. You chose your cigarettes before me. I said, we won the lottery and you didn't even get me into school because you couldn't have a house without, you wanted a 4-bedroom house with cats and all this other stuff. So I had a lot of frustration with her. I didn't hate her. I didn't like her necessarily, but I felt a responsibility towards her. And then it wasn't until I was writing this book that I'm talking about right now. It's Just You and Me, Kid, my book about my life story, which will be out this year.
Awesome.
It wasn't until I was really writing this book and I was like, okay, it was actually before this book, but what I did was I invited myself to sit there and think, okay, my mom used to tell me I'm 4 years old. I'm like, she would say, I'm 4 years old. I'm 4 years old. I'm like, mom, you're a grown ass woman. Shut up. Start acting like it. She was in her 40s at this point. Mm-hmm. And I never understood why. I'm like, why does she keep saying she's 4 years old? She had a passion for stuffed animals. She had so many stuffed animals like a little kid. She had all these cats. Like, we had 18 cats in the car. We had 30 cats in the house. That's all we caught. Jeez. To get in the car. There was 30 cats in the house. It wasn't dirty or anything. It was all clean. She was like OCD about cleanliness, but she had 30 cats. I was the one that had to clean them all. That was the fun part. But anyways, so when I sat there and I took a step back and I thought, okay, it's not all about me, Chris. Right. What was one of the big parenting techniques when we were kids? Negative reinforcement. Oh, right. Nobody's going to love you if you're fat. That's what my wife was told. And so she held on to her entire life. That's even brutal. After we got married, she held on to that belief that she will not find love because she's fat, because that's what her dad said. And so when you think about that, what do parents do? Parents gave us that negative reinforcement. Oh, you'll be this. You know, they're just trying to scare us into that.
However they were brought up.
Right. And so when I sat there and I thought, okay, if I was born in 1942, which my mom was, it's a parents who were in their 20s, early 20s. My grandmother and my grandfather were in their 20s. My grandmother was a real piece of work, psychologically. I think she had six different diagnosed psychiatric disorders, including schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, multiple personal, all these different things. So my mom grew up with that person.
Wow.
And my mom. So when I thought about it and I was like, I still wanted to argue with myself about, did she do the best she could? And I had to sit there and I had to get in her brain. I had to get out of my brain because I'm like, no, I would have thought, okay, I'm not going to have a kid and not do these things. But in her brain, she thought, rather than giving him away, because she was going to place me for adoption, rather than give me away and risking me to go to foster families, she thought that I'll do the best I can. Like me, Samantha Blake, whatever. And so when I started looking at that, and then I started realizing I went through all those terrible things for me to have that opportunity to decide whether or not I was going to be like her and be a victim all my life and to bitch, piss, and moan and yell at everybody and be angry to make herself feel important.
Yeah.
Or if I was going to dedicate my life to being different than her. And so when I reunited with my sister, I didn't see my sister from the time I was 9 years old until my 30s.
Wow.
When we reunited, my sister asked me, she goes, how did you not turn out like mom? And I looked at her dead in the face. And I said, I chose fucking not to. I said, I have read hundreds and hundreds of autobiographies from famous people, and all famous people don't yell at people. All famous people live their life. All famous people get, you know, are smart people or successful people. They get up in the morning and they do these things. And I said, so I've been doing all the things that successful people do. I don't do the things that mom did. Sure. Inside of me, I have mom's sarcasm and anger and all that other stuff, but I've developed ways to be able to filter myself so that that's not the instantaneous voice that comes out. I sit there and think, okay, Chris, that was a funny thought. You can't say that out loud. Here, let's translate it. You know, I sit there and I make it fun for myself because I'm like, I'll hear somebody say something. I'm like, oh my God, are you fucking stupid? And I'll translate that. I'm like, have you considered another way of thinking about that? You know, or before my mom would say, are you fucking stupid? And so I told my sister, I said, I made it a choice for myself because I didn't want to end up like mom. I said, mom said it was all this generational shit and not to have kids because violence ran in our family. I'm happy to say this was after my sister, but I've been a parent now for 7 years. And I've never laid a hand on my kid. My mom said physical abuse runs in our family because she was beaten. I was beaten. I'm like, no, that's a choice. You made a choice to fucking beat the shit out of me. You made a choice to throw a full can of Coke at my head and crack my head open. You made that choice.
Yikes.
You made that choice. But because I decided to become better from those experiences. And that's what I tell people. You can come back from anything. And I've come back from a lot, but I have interviewed so many people. I've been doing broadcasting for over 10 years and I've interviewed some incredible people. Yeah, my story is insane, but I've met so many people like with stories 17,000 times worse than mine. And they're in the same spot. You're like, what's the key? What's the key is that we're not victims. The key is that we're not going to let other people define us. We're not going to stay down because somebody else wants us to be down, whether it's our best friend, our husband, our wife, our mother, our sister. Fuck all those people. Sorry. I have to be direct.
Yeah.
You have to wish those people well and you have to get around the right people. And when you do that and you take chances and you take imperfect action, it's amazing how fast your life will change and how many things will open up for you.
How have you forgiven your mom?
Oh, it's forgiven. I was able to do that through the book. I was able to do that through that process. I was able to, you know, I've had some very lengthy conversations about forgiveness. There are certain aspects that I don't forgive her for, but overall I forgive her and I thank her and I still talk to her this day, you know, even though she's passed for like 12 years now. Mm. I thank her for all those experiences and I thank God for those experiences because all of those things refine me to become the person I am today. So there's nothing to really forgive for unless I get in that dark space, unless I allow myself to kind of get in that space, which sometimes I do. I'm human. I'm not perfect just because I've been coaching for 25 years. We all have our shit that we have to deal with. And that's an ongoing process. It's never going to be perfect. There's always new stuff that comes up.
Right.
I've solved this group of issues in my life. And then I get to be 55. And now I get to think, oh, wow, all my friends are dying. My friends' parents are getting older. Oh, my God, wow. I've got, you know, my long jet. So now I've got a different set of issues to think about. All the other things, you know, keeping the light bill paid. That's good. Now I got to, okay, how do I keep from fucking, you know, running myself into the ground in the next 20 years? So that what I teach is that resiliency to be able to sit there and go, okay, wow, there's a new issue coming up. What is it that I'm going to do? How am I going to realize that it is what it is? And now it's up to me to take that progressive action and not sit and hope, wish, and pray that something happens or somebody's going to come fix it for me or that I can blame somebody, right? Blaming somebody doesn't do anything. Right. Waiting for somebody to do something doesn't do anything. You have to take that imperfect action, however small it might be. Wow, I can knit something that maybe I can make $3 a day on Etsy. Okay, $3 a day times 30 days. Okay, what's that? Okay, what else can I do? What else can I do? Oh, maybe I could drive for Uber a little bit. Maybe I can start making some recipes out of my house and do a DoorDash from my house. I just found out that my tattoo artist said that he orders Indian food and he thought it was from a restaurant and he went to go pick it up, but it was somebody's house. And so people are, you know, selling food out of their house.
Interesting.
I just inspired a guy to do it the other day. He's a young kid. He loves to cook. And I'm like, put it on Etsy or put it on the DoorDash thing and, you know, give it out to a bunch of people, get some reviews on there and start selling it and making it out of your trailer, dude.
So why don't they teach these concepts in our education system? I know that you have talked about wanting to help raise the kids, right? Because there are some people who, as adults, they just don't want to take responsibility. They live their life like a victim, like they have no control, like they have no choice. And every day you have a choice. So how do we educate ourselves and continue to look internally at our own sense of resourcefulness and then share that with the next generation? Because these are the people that we want to help shape the world, right?
Yes. Yes. Ultimately, it has to come down to self-love. Self-love is the first component, right? You have to love yourself. Again, going back to that example before, you love Doug on a scale of 1 to 10, 10. Okay. Now if I put the question back on the person, usually is what I do. I'm like, okay, tell me how you're taking care of yourself or tell me your love for yourself on a scale of 1 to 10. Or sometimes I do that first, depending on how I think the person might change their answer. But usually it's around a 4 or 5 for the most part.
I was going to say most people are like self-love. What does that even mean?
Yeah. They're about a 4 or 5. Some people are 2 or 3. Some people are more on a 7. And I can see knowing, you know, from the person, I can tell if they're telling me the truth or not. Uh-huh. And so that first component is, if you're trying to say that you're doing your best for everybody else, but you're not doing the best for yourself, that's where that incongruency happens. That's where your values don't match your actions. And that's where you're going to start lying to yourself. And that's where those short-term gratifications come into play. Mm. Oh man, I don't want to think about this anymore. I'm going to go watch a bunch of Netflix. I'm going to go watch my sports. I'm going to go whatever, you know, sex, drugs, rock, whatever it might be for you, your little escape. And then I'm going to go back to my life when I have a break from the reality of my life. And so instead, we have to love ourselves enough to sit there and say, okay, yes, am I being truthful with myself? Number one, am I lying to myself? Am I in a relationship like you, your relationship coach, right? Am I in a relationship that excites me? Am I in a relationship that's going to foster positive growth for the next, you know, am I in love with this person, right? And so oftentimes we stay because we have this sunk cost bias. Oh, I've already invested this much time. Oh, I'm going to wait until the kids do this. If you're not loving and taking care of yourself and you expect amazing job, you expect financial rewards, you expect other relationships to be amazing, you expect your body to be great, you're fucked up. You can't. It's all intertwined to that self-love component. So if you're not taking care of yourself, you say you're taking care of yourself, but you're really not, and you're putting everybody else first before yourself, then that incongruency comes back into your subconscious mind about your beliefs, and your beliefs dictate your attitude, and your attitude dictates your actions. So again, you have to go back to that step of saying, okay, am I happy in this relationship? Yes or no? No. It's either yes or no. It's not maybe, it's not sort of. It's am I? No, I'm not happy. Okay, that's fine. Is there an opportunity?
But
is there an opportunity to work on it? Okay, yes. Okay, start taking that progressive action. What needs to happen first? I need to have that conversation. Okay. Plan it out in your mind's eye. You know, visualize that conversation happening and see it going a great way, see it going a terrible way. See yourself in that terrible way, managing your emotions and saying, hey, maybe now's not the right time. But start taking that progressive action to figure out what's going on. And yes, you might get an answer to a question that you do not want. But I would rather have that answer in 2024 than have that answer in 2029 and spend the next five years of my life thinking maybe it'll change. Maybe this will happen. Maybe that, none of that maybe shit happens, guys. Right. Guess what? You get to the next 5 years and then you go through a more lengthy divorce and you go through more ugly shit, because I see it happen to a lot of my friends. It's ridiculous. You know, you got to take care of yourself. You got to take those challenges, because, and especially if you have kids, right? Don't subscribe to the do as I say,
do as I do. Yeah. Right? Do as I say, you not know? As I do. Yeah.
Kids are going to call you a hypocrite. They're going to call you out later in life. Trust me, they're taking notes at a very, very, very young age. I know. I've talked to kids that I've known from parents that were 2 or 3, and I've talked to them at 17. I'm like, did you know your parents were unhappy when you were 3? Yeah. I'm like, oh, funny, because your parents, I know they did. You know, they ultimately got divorced, you know, 7 years later, and they tried to stay together for the kids. We knew mom and dad were upset and it bugged us. And we always knew that everything was off and it wasn't better until they got divorced. And then they both got happy. And then we had 4 sets of parents who were happy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying. But so many people just don't want that. I'm reading a book right now called The Comfort Crisis, and I highly recommend it to you guys out there, because it talks about the fact that we want to stay so comfortable. When you stay comfortable, you don't grow. You don't grow. You stay stagnant. You die when you're not growing, when you're not out there pushing yourself and living life, not just existing in life. Right. You got to be a participant in it. And so many times people, I've been this way my whole life. I helped a 69-year-old woman change her life. Right. At any point in life, right now is the time you say, no more. I'm not going to do this anymore. And you can ask this question. When will I have had enough? I'm all about questions, Don. I'm all about questions. That's what I do as a coach. I ask a lot of questions. You ask yourself, when will I have had enough? I asked this to a coaching client the other day. She just started with me. And I said, when will you have had enough? I don't think I'm really there. And I said, well, then tell me when you're there. What's got to happen in your house? Uh-huh. Right now you're doing the laundry. You're doing all the cooking. You're doing most of the cleaning. Your husband's watching sports. Your kids are on their iPads. They're old enough to be able to participate. You don't have time to do your own shit. You've already explained it out to me that that's why you're not happy. So when will you have had enough? What's going to be the break? Where are you going to snap and tell your kids and your husband that you're fucking tired of it and you're pissed off and you're tired of being taken? Because it's going to happen.
Taken
is it going to be too much
granted, taken advantage of? Yeah.
I'm like, is it too much clothes on the floor? Is it you have a weekend plan with your girlfriends and then they screw it up somehow? What is it going to be? I said, because when you get to that point and you proactively see that point in your mind and you know it's going, it's not, nothing's changed. Nothing's changed in the last 5 years. Guess what? It's heading there. So now you got to proactively get that leverage in place now to sit there and say, okay, this is what I foresee happening. And then sit down and have those challenging conversations. And I can assure you guys out there in TV and radio land, yeah, when you go to your family and say, I need you to help me with the dishes. I need you guys to help me with your laundry. I need you to fold and sort your laundry. I need to put your, I need you guys to become little
human. I need you to become responsible.
Yeah. I need you to go do these things. Everybody I've coached, they're most family. Let me think about percentages. Probably about 70% of the families did not know that the mom was that upset about it and offered to help and pitched in and did great. 30% of the families kind of gave them grief, but we worked through that. Like, oh, they said this. And I'm like, don't fucking do their laundry anymore.
Yeah.
Just don't. Oh, you don't understand. Cause though I'm like, I don't give a shit. Let them go to school with fucking stinky underwear and have their friends laugh at them. Do it. Like, right. Stop doing it. You're doing it. And they're going to continue to take advantage of you until right. you stop. And right. she stopped. I said, stop making lunches. Take that time for yourself. Say, this is my time. There are the ingredients. I'm happy to show you what to do. Guess what? They started making their lunches.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! Guess what? They started figuring out how to do their laundry. And guess what? Mom went, I should have done that sooner. And if I had a mere 50 cents in the 20 years I've been coaching that I've had everybody tell me I should have done this before. I wish I would have spent the money before. I wish I would have I knew I needed this 10 years ago. I wish I would have done it 10 years ago. I would own my own island. I would literally own my own island. So many people have said, and I've said it too. I said it too. I did not have a coach or a mastermind in anything until 2013, really. Mm-hmm. But I was successful and I was doing really good, but I wasn't doing great. I wasn't tearing it up. And I decided at that point that I would invest money in something besides trying to help my mom or pay bills. And I sat there and said, I'm going to put some money into me.
Investing and so I spent
$5,000. I joined a mastermind. I went there four different times throughout the year and I changed my business model. I changed who I am. I became authentic and congruent. I hired a coach and I've been happier ever since.
Wow. I
need those people.
You do need people. And you need, I feel like this world, we're all like into our own shit. You know, we're all into our own shit. And sometimes we can't, what's that saying? You can't see the forest through the trees.
Yep.
Right. And so how do you take yourself out of, because while you were talking before about all this shit that you've grown through, it's like when we're in the midst of our mess, it's sometimes really challenging for us to see beyond what's right, you know, beyond the mess. Like, I'm stuck in my mess. I'm stuck in my story. I don't know how to get out. I keep asking myself these questions and I'm not getting any answers. So what do I need to do instead? Just something different.
Something different. That's the exact word, Don. And just, I just want to share this with everybody out there listening and thinking, oh my God, he's got it all figured out. I still go through it to this day, ladies and gentlemen.
Of course, we all do.
I still have the stuff that I have to deal with within my own family and within my own life where I have to say, I've been putting that off. I don't want to deal with it. And I have to do it too.
Yeah.
It's not easy. It's not enjoyable. It doesn't really get any easier. It gets faster because you just realize, okay, I could sit there and keep delaying this, or I could just bite it off and let's just go. Right. Uh-huh. That's generally what you have to do. You always think, oh, well, maybe this time or that time or this time, just have the conversation, get it out there. Cause once you say it, then there's no taking it back. And then you take that action. You take that progression.
How has this impacted your role as a husband? And how has it impacted your role as a dad?
Great question. What my role, me being a coach, me kind of being in the personal development space, how is that?
Just your whole life experience, like how you show up now for your wife and for your kid.
Oh, geez. Yeah. No, that's a better question. Way better. I mean, because I've done the deliberate work, there's more, I have more peace. I have more patience. Mm-hmm. I'm very much, less into my ego where I was before. I was more about egoic validation. Like, you know, am I making the money? Do I have the office? Do I have the title? Am I traveling? Am I being on stage? Am I doing all these things? Now I could care less about that stuff. I mean, sure, it's important and it's nice, but Am I creating a memory within my son that if I died tomorrow, not that he's going to say I changed the world, but how did I make him feel? And I'll give you guys an example, because this is something we need to be very aware of in our own lives, because I consider myself a great dad, and I've had so many people tell me I'm a great dad, and I appreciate that. And I don't say that egotistically at all.
No.
But my son did say something to me recently, and he said, Dad, and I have to remind him 1,000 times, which I'm sure most parents can understand. Please pick this up. And I told him, I said, anything on the floor is considered fair game and I'm going to throw it away. And so one day I told him, I said, that's on the floor. And he just looked at me. He goes, Dad, he goes, you always make me feel, and he goes, never mind. And I'm like, no. And I got down on his level and I'm like, no. What's going on? Tell me, talk to me. Tell me what's going on. Mm. goes, well, it always seems like you're so harsh on me, you know? And I said, no, buddy. I said, first of all, thank you for telling me, looking him right in the eyes. And I keep telling him to look at me because he's looking away.
Yeah.
I said, no, thank you for telling me, buddy. I don't know this. I consider myself doing a pretty good job. I said, but you have to understand. I said, when I have to tell you, I said, would you agree? Cause I do the coaching thing on. I said, would you agree that me and mom have to tell you multiple times to pick up your stuff? Yeah. And I said, can you imagine that gets frustrating? Like having to say something like when you come up to mom and you go, mom, 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 and she can't answer you right away, or she doesn't answer you right away, and you get louder and you get more frustrated. I said, do you understand that? And he goes, yeah. And I go, that's the same thing for us. You don't see my stuff on the floor. You don't see mommy's stuff on the floor, right? I said, so have respect and care for everybody else in the house to pick up your stuff. And I said, if I have to tell you seven times, it gets frustrating. And guess what? When I say it the eighth time and I raise my voice, you actually do it. So that's what I have to do in order to get you to do it. And said, so it's not that I want to be mean. It's not that I want to do this. I don't. I would want to say it once and be like, oh, cool, my kid did it.
Right. Said, and your kids say, okay.
Yeah. I said, unfortunately, this is kind of where we're at. I said, but I want to tell you, I told him repeatedly, thank you for telling me. I said, because that's his impression. That's what he's seeing. That's what he's thinking. Like, I'm out there like, babe, I love you. And I'm giving him hugs and doing all these things. And what, how was your day? And doing his homework and playing. I'm doing all the right things. But that one little thing, his impression of me was that. And that is enough for me to go, wait. So I've been very, very more deliberate in the way I say things. Uh-huh. Not always perfect, but I'm like, hey, Jax, we got some stuff on the floor, right? He goes, yeah. And I said, does anybody else have any stuff on the floor? And he goes, no. And I'm like, you got 2 minutes. I said, anything left on the floor, that means you don't want it. Starts picking his stuff up. Mm-hmm. So I've learned from that, like, to approach it differently. Cause even though I'm entitled to get mad, and it's okay for me to get mad, and that I shouldn't have to say things seven times, how he's receiving that information. So because I've done so much work on myself to understand people better, I understand that people want to be understood more than they want to, they want to be more understood than understand. And so it's upon us. And that's what's making me a better husband and a better father, is that I understand it's not all about me, and to put myself into their situations, and to realize also that something that came to me a couple of years ago that somebody else said, I can't take credit for it. Dennis Waitley said it. He's an old time motivational speaker, and he was talking about his life. And he said, he goes, when you're with somebody, ask yourself, am I being the person that I would want to be with if I were them?
Right.
And so the way I translated it in my brain is like, when I'm with Jackson, at that point, he was five. So it was 2 years ago. And if I were a five-year-old, am I being the dad that I'd want? So if I'm a five-year-old, what kind of dad do I want? Do I want motivational dad? Do I want grumpy dad? Do I want dad that's like, hey, what's going on? How was your day? And oh, let's play some army man. You know, do all that stuff. Like, act silly.
Right.
And so now, and again, not perfect, because I want people to think, I get that all the time. Like, oh, you're so, I'm like, no, I'm not. But I'm very intentional. So like after this, I know I'm going to go pick them up. So I'll pause for 2 or 3 minutes, depending, and I'll reframe my brain. Okay. I'm going to go pick up my kid. My kid could care less that I'm on TV. My kid could care less about my podcast ratings. My kid just wants dad.
Right.
So for the next 3 hours, next 4 hours before he goes to bed, how can I be dad? Mm-hmm. How can I be like, okay, you know, and how can I say, hey, is there anything on your mind you want to talk about? You know, to make sure we're following up on loose ends. So he doesn't think like, okay, you know, is that still an issue? Does he still see me that way? Because oftentimes we think we change, but still we might still be doing things that are still registering on their radar, because that's what they're focusing on.
Right.
That's what they're focusing on. So like, I'll give everybody an example. Like, look around your office right now. Tell me everything that's blue. Okay. That's blue. 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 Everybody do it at home. Okay. That's blue. Okay. Cool. I bet you if he asked me like, what's blue for $100, I'll be able to name it, right? Okay, tell me what's orange. Well, Chris, I was looking for blue. The same thing happens in our life. If you're looking to be upset, if you're looking to be frustrated, if you're looking to be angry, if you're looking for all that shit, you're gonna find it. And those people who are looking for it are the people that watch news and that follow politics and they're looking for that. And because I was one of them. I was a very in touch news person. I knew what was going on in politics. I knew the political things. I knew what Congress was doing. I knew all that shit, but I was doing fuck all, nothing about it except for complaining about it. And one day I decided I'm going to take a break from the news and I'm going to see how it helps my disposition, because I was negative and I was frustrated. Yeah. Government should be doing this and these people should be doing this and blah, 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 blah. And then after a couple of weeks, I was like, you know what? I don't miss it. And that was 10 years ago. I'm still informed about things, but I don't sit there and make it a focus of mine. I focus on love. I focus on opportunity. Yeah. I focus on experience. I focus on curiosity. I focus on adventure. I focus on, hey, this is a pretty cool moment. I get to talk to my friend Dawn on the other side of the country through technology, and I get to help people, right? It's, you know, life is really, really, really amazing. I'll tell you this other story. I had a guy that knows that I say that often, and he knows that he knows what I do and how I use examples. Well, he was an older guy, didn't take care of his bowels, wound up not going to the doctor and not telling anybody they wasn't going poop. He wasn't going number two, and he didn't go number two for a very long time.
Yikes.
And so his colon burst.
Oh,
he was
my gosh.
Dude. He was a dude's dude. He was like, oh, we don't talk about poop.
Oh, I don't need anything. I don't need help.
No. So his colon burst. Wound up having half of his long intestine, short intestine. I had a bunch of feet of that taken out. Wound up being on a colostomy bag. And he tells me at a family gathering, he's in Detroit, tells me at a family, he pulls me aside. You know, I kind of know what's going on with Uncle Mike. And he goes, hey, Chris, he goes, I want to tell you something. He goes, you know how that you're always telling people to look on the bright side of things? And I'm like, yeah, yeah. I had no idea what he's going to say. He goes, man, just to be able to take a shit on my own, I would. He goes, you take that for granted. You take that for granted. People take that for granted. He goes, don't ever take a shit for granted. And I just never escaped my mind. Like, there's the little things in life, you know, being on a feeding tube or something like that, or your jaw wired shut because you broke your jaw. I've had friends that do that. They're like, oh my God, Chris, just to be able to chew food. Like, oh my God, what I would give to be able to fucking chew a pea. I would chew something I don't even like. I've had people tell me that. I'm like, it's amazing what you realize what you don't have until it's gone. I mean, there's a reason why that's a phrase. So let's enjoy things now. That's why I wake up in the morning before my eyes open. I say what I'm grateful for. I'm grateful for another day. I'm not a religious person. I'm a spiritual person. I'm grateful for another day. I get another day on this earth to experience life because I don't know what my ticket's going to be called. I have no idea. It's random. So I say what I'm grateful for. I find new things every day to be grateful for. I end the day with gratitude. I start my day with intentions before my eyes open also. And I live a pretty good life. You know, it's not perfect. It's not all that stuff, but at the same time, I am happier than I've ever been. I've been more confident than I've ever been. I help more people than I've ever been financially. Everything in my life is successful. So as I continue to do those things and to take that imperfect action. And as you get older, by the way, guys, it does get harder. Like I have to convince myself to go to the gym. Before I went to the gym 6-7 days a week. Now I find myself for the first time in my life having to convince myself to go to the gym. And that's weird.
Making excuses.
Exactly. I find it weird. I'm like, oh, geez, I got to get up and go to the gym. It's like before it was mandatory for me. So it's even me. I get a little lazy and my little spare tire is just a little jump right now. But
okay. And how has all this impact your relationship with your wife?
Next question.
You said I could ask you anything.
No. I just figured it'd be like, ooh. No, I mean, I've always been a great communicator. I've always been a very open communicator. Mm-hmm. It's helped me realize that the small stuff is really small. There's a great book out there. Like I have ADHD. I've had ADHD for a long time. I got diagnosed in my 30s. Textbook, right? Really bad. So absent-mindedness. So she's always had a trouble with me, like not finishing things like, oh, you start this and you da, 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 da. So in her 40s, in her early 40s, she's 10 years younger than I am. She got tested. So she has inattentive ADHD. So we found out that that what's ingrained in us neurologically, it's a neurological situation, ADHD. It's a neurological firing. It's also an emotional component too. But so I found out that I was mad at her symptoms of things. Or the results of symptoms and things. And she was too. So I got this book by Dr. Gabor Mate. He's phenomenal in the ADHD space. Gabor Mate. It's ADHD in marriage or something like that.
Oh.
Yeah, it's ADHD in marriage. And when I read the book, Dawn, boom. Because again, I'm seeking the answers. I'm seeking the wisdom. Seeking what are other people doing in their marriage? Because my marriage is important. We've been to marriage counseling 3 times in our marriage in 16 years. So I'm not shy about that. We do the work. But when I read this book, I realized that that she's not conscious of the fact that she'll pull the jelly out of the refrigerator and not put it back. She's not conscious of the bread's out. She's not conscious of these. She's just like, okay, I'm in the moment. I'm going to have a sandwich and then I'm going to go back and I'm going to do those things. Mm-hmm. So I'm walking around going, why can't you put shit away? Why is she always putting shit away? So it's allowed me to take a step back and realize, why am I taking this personal? She knows that I'm not a neat freak, but I like things organized. So why is she, I think in my brain, why is she intentionally doing this when she knows it pisses me off? Why is she leaving a mess when she knows it? And then you start thinking, is that deliberate? Da, da, da.
Right.
And then you just talk like to her and you find out.
Passive aggressive or something.
Yeah. And then you talk to her and you find out, I didn't even realize I was doing that. So we build up this whole story in our brain. So it's allowed me to kind of step back and say, hey, can you do me a favor? You know, when you're making the sandwiches in the morning, if you remember, can you please put the stuff back in the refrigerator? That way it doesn't go bad. And then just solve it instead of carrying that story around your head. Oh, they're probably this and they're probably that. And how many people are walking around with stories about their bosses and about their coworkers and about their moms and about their sisters and about their best friends and about the talk, ladies and gentlemen, talk. It's incredible what happens when you communicate. That expectation of what it is that you have, that perception of what you have, oftentimes is incorrect. And when you find out the truth of a story, then you could take that progressive action and be able to get yourself out of that or let that go and be like, oh my God, I've been carrying that around this whole time thinking this. And now also, what do? You feel like light as a feather, but it's taking that action.
And it's having compassion for where the other person is.
Yes.
So I think that gets messed up, but as long, this was my challenge in my own marriage. You know, I had a lot of compassion for his stuff, but I felt like there was not a mutual sense of taking responsibility. You know, because you talked earlier when you're talking about your son, you're like, it's all about other people. And yet it's paradoxically about your self-love. So it's like, how do those two things match? Because your self-love is giving and nourishing yourself. And yet when you're giving to others, you're nourishing and giving to others. And so there's this, I don't know, is it like a symbiotic balance or
what's energy exchange?
Yeah.
There's an energy exchange.
Yeah.
And what's right and what's fair. You know, that's what usually comes down to.
What's right and what's fair. There's a good question. Good question.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And how do you determine that?
Up to themselves. Most people are sitting in quiet misery, all mad, and they're giving off these vibes that their spouses are picking up on and reacting to. So that there's a whole dysfunction right there. Like you're walking around not telling the person that you're mad at them and you're expecting them to figure it out. That person's going, what the hell is wrong?
You should
with
just you? Know.
And it's fucked up. I just see people doing it all the time. Like, how that working out for you? You know, people come to me like, oh, well, this and that, and this and that, and this and that. I'm like, when was the last time you talked to your husband about that? Oh, I talked to him 7 times. He doesn't pay attention to me. I'm like, then leave him.
Ouch.
Then be done. You know, what are you staying around? What are you sticking around for? You think he's going to fucking get it one day? You know what? You know what? And so when people get to that, when we cut to the clean on it, as I call it, it's pretty incredible. Like you just slice to it. Like, then what are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Are you just charting time?
I'm
just
tolerating. I'm accepting things that bug me.
No, be honest with yourself. Communicate with others. Take action. Learn from it. Enjoy the process. Get around people who are excited for you to go through that process, that want you to go through that process. My coach holds me accountable. She has me do uncomfortable things all the time that I don't want to do. I want you to reach out to these people and do this. I want you to do this. And I want you to... Okay.
You're like, no.
But I know she's, I'm not, I know she has that. She sees the vision for the path that I need to be on. So we're all helping each other along, right?
Yes. Yes. And I feel like, I look at it. That's how I think of it too. I mean, this is why we connected, you know, like our energy and wanting to help people and uplift people. And I feel like that whole pointing the finger, you know, at somebody else, you're like pointing 3 fingers back at yourself. So it always comes back to, what do I need to change in me? Why am I feeling impatient or angry or frustrated or, you know, upset or whatever? It's like, what is going on? Because like with your kid, I feel like it's much easier with your children to be forgiving and understanding and more compassionate. And then with your spouse, you're like, you're an adult, you should know better.
But we're all still little boys and little girls inside of us. Yeah, that's the way I look at it.
We are. And so how do you develop that sense of compassion for yourself, you know, so that you can extend that same grace to the people that you love?
Mm-hmm. You got to start talking to yourself better. I mean, it's literally changing the language, like 2 words to eliminate from your language, always and never.
Yeah.
I always screw up. I'll never get a job. I always do this. I never do that. That's bullshit. It's not always and never.
Never black and white.
If you tell yourself those scripts, ladies and gentlemen, I suck at math. I suck at math. I suck at math. Guess what? I suck at math.
Right.
I can never get a relationship to work. Guess what? You'll never get a relationship to work because you're going to continually look for the thing that you look for to break up because you self-sabotage. And so many people self-sabotage because they don't have that love for themselves. So again, it starts with that inner component. And some people sit there and look at me as, whoa, you're woo-woo now and you're all that. But no, trust me, when I was doing it because I thought I had to do something or because I was gaining a result, sure. on paper, I was happy and I was fulfilled, but inside I wasn't, because I wasn't being true to who I am. Right. And so it's not about the external results. It's about the internal peace that you can bring within yourself when you act as though you are, as if you are, fly your freak flag, be who you are.
I was just going to say that.
That's, I mean, I tell that people all
fly
the time.
Fly your freak flag, Christopher.
You know, just be who you are. You know, people sit there and like, what's this all about? And I'm like, I wear a bandana because I hate sweating.
Uh-huh.
And people think it's a whole thing. And I'm like, nope, I've had a bandana on all my life. I've had a hat on backwards all my life. I incorporated the two when I changed my style. And I was like, all right, this is it. I don't want to sweat.
Unstoppable, kick ass, no excuses.
I wear it all the time.
And I don't want to sweat.
Even if it's cold outside, I wear it. Because sometimes I still sweat. I just don't like doing that shit. And I tend to be hot. So that's what it was. And then all of a sudden it became part of the brand. And I told people like, oh yeah, you should look like that. I'm like, this is how I look all the time. Why not? And so when people meet me, they're like, you're exactly like you are on your podcast. You're exactly like you are this or that. And I'm like, yeah, because I don't have to fake being anybody else.
That's a beautiful thing. I mean, that's what makes you so special, because you are kick ass. Like you to look at you, people would think, oh, he's really tough and he's a badass. He's a kick ass. You know, he's really strong. And yet you're so deep and loving and kind deep and loving and kind and so compassionate and, you know, concerned about your own personal growth as well as your impact on other people. And I feel like so many times a lot of us get just lost in our stuff and we don't always take responsibility or don't become aware of how we're showing up to wherever we go. Sure. And so a lot of that, I mean, I remember when you saying about writing the eulogy, I did it. And it was really powerful. It's a really powerful exercise to say, these are the things that I want to be remembered for. This is the legacy that I want to leave for my children. And that was really one of the reasons why I got divorced, because I didn't want their kids to think that our marital mess was healthy. It was probably normal for a lot of people, but it wasn't healthy and it wasn't loving and kind. And so I said, I want to create a sense of peace and love and kindness and compassion and forgiveness for their dad. And I want the kids to know that kindness is really important and taking responsibility for yourself. You know, that you always are this internal game. Yeah, like, this is really interesting. I wonder why I'm reacting this way.
Yeah, play it like a game. I mean, if you have to, you know, continue. Right? If you're going to play a game, we all want to win the game, right?
We all want to win the game.
Then go out there and win it. Like, what do I got to do to win the day? Like,
well, if I win, somebody else loses. It's how can we all win together in this game?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, it's about thinking about the fact that we win anytime we take that imperfect action. We win. You know, again, thinking about the day, how can I win the day? How can I go to bed tonight thinking that this was a great day or knowing that it's a great day? Okay. Did I impact people? So I wake up with that intention. I have a book that I keep by my bed. On one side, it's gratitude. On the other side, it's proud. So what am I grateful for? And what am I proud of? And that's something proud beautiful. I just recently added, because pride is my word for the year, because I realized that I wasn't taking as much pride in myself. Going back to the working out thing, I wasn't taking as much pride in myself and my vehicle. And I figured like, I'm not taking as much pride in myself. So now I haven't been taking as much pride in my office. I haven't been taking as much pride in my bedroom. I haven't taken my truck's dirty. Where before I took real great pride in myself. And then I would like, okay, I got to take care of my truck. I got to make sure all my, you know, and I started getting lazy. And so I realized this year, my word was pride, to be able to sit there and, okay, act as if, okay, I'm going to act as if a film crew were following me around saying, okay, what's a day in the life of Christopher Roush like? How does he wash his car? How does he do his laundry? How does he clean his house? How good would I do if a film crew was following me around? So that's how I find out what my best is. So when I'm doing the floorboards and I'm thinking like, okay, I just want to do it real quick. And I think, okay, if I was trying to sell my house right now, what do we do when we try to sell our house? We make our house look so beautiful.
Oh, beautiful.
And then we leave it. I've seen so many people, like, they put so much money in their house and then they sell it and then they leave. And I'm like, why didn't you do that while you lived there? And so when I'm cleaning and I'm doing stuff, I'm thinking, okay, if I were going to sell my house tomorrow, how clean would it be? What would I put away? What else would I do differently? And I take that little extra step, that little extra initiative. If MTV Cribs was going to come over and say, okay, we're going to film your house, How clean would I make it? How much pride am I going to put in my things? And when you win that day and you go to bed like, wow, you know, my house looks nice. My car looks nice today. You know, I took extra pride in myself. I put makeup on, you know, I did something uncomfortable. I took a risk. I took a chance. I made a difference in somebody else's life. You put your head on the pillow going to bed, thinking about those things. Guess what? You wake up feeling better as a result.
And you feel more grateful.
It all works in harmony and unison.
All right. How can people get in touch with you? Because I'm trying to be mindful of your time. How can people get in touch with you?
Scream real loud. Say Christopher Roush. No, they can go to noexcusescoach.com. Noexcusescoach.com. They can go there. They can find my podcast, which is Raw and Unscripted. That's my Tuesday night podcast. I have another podcast called The Unfiltered Experience. And they can find out all about the good things that I'm doing with coaching and speaking and everything else.
And right volunteering and charity stuff and working with kids and all the beautiful things that you do in the world.
They can go to my YouTube page. They can find I think I almost have 1,000 videos, motivational videos, like 60-second videos to 3-minute videos to my, I have videos of me in a suit and tie. I have videos of me and Les Brown. I have all sorts of cool stuff on my YouTube page.
You're a rock star.
Thank you. I try.
Okay. I have one more question that I ask all my guests.
Okay.
How do you define real love?
How do I find real love?
Yeah.
Natural, authentic, not forced, inspirational. Mm-hmm. I think real love is inspirational. It inspires you to do those extra little things. Mm-hmm. Real love takes work. Real love is knowing the core of a person and loving them anyway. Mm. Yes. That's the way I think. You know the crust of a motherfucker, and then you're like, you still love him anyway. I have my idiosyncrasy. If you put my wife on this podcast and talk about me, she'd be like, oh my God, and this and that. And we all have our shit. You find somebody that can put up with your shit and can help you be a better person.
Yeah.
That's real love.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much, Christopher. I mean, you have just spoken everything about the mission of my podcast, which is talking about real love and really coming back to that most important relationship you'll ever have is the one you have with yourself, because it sets the stage for everything else in your life. And you are just a shining, shining example. I'm so thankful that you came here tonight or today to share with me.
Your beautiful soul. Thank you, my dear. I appreciate it. I appreciate you. And you asked excellent questions. I'm always happy to share and have a great conversation with you.
Yay. Thank you.
So you're very welcome.
Thanks, Christopher Roush. Everybody look him up. He's amazing. I mean, he's just doing such amazing work in the world. And every day, wake up to more real love. Take care, everybody. See you next time.
Subscribe to the Wake Up to Real Love podcast. Leave 5-star reviews. And of course, share with your friends. You can find Dawn on various social media platforms at Dawn Richard or at The Awakening with Dawn.